Nicole Brandon with Hourglass Brides, and welcome to our show. Today, I am so excited about today's guest because we're talking about laughter in a relationship. And all of the shows over the past few months, we've been talking about communication. We've been talking about steps and stages and tools and techniques to a better relationship. And I honestly can't think of a better tool and technique than laughter. We're talking about that on everybody's list. People are always looking for a sense of humor. And I know personally for myself, my father proposed to my mother on the very first date. And my mom said yes. And when I've talked to my mom and I've asked her, how did you know? You only went out with him once. How did you know? And she said, honey, he made me laugh like I have never laughed before. And I thought, no matter what happens in life, if he can make me laugh like that, we could get through anything. And they just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and they're still so in love. So I know how important that is. And today's guest is a celebrity. He is a friend. He is known throughout the world of making people laugh, bringing joy, bringing light, bringing humor, and bringing love. And so we're so excited to have Yakov Smirnoff with us today. He is a mainstay in the entertainment scene since the 1970s. He was a regular guest star on the award-winning NBC sitcom Night Court. He has been a popular guest on numerous national television shows, including The Tonight Show. You've seen him on HBO. You've enjoyed his humor and his critically acclaimed Showtime special, Yakov. He has also co-starred in movies with Robin Williams. He was in the Moscow and the Hudson movie. He was with Tom Hanks in The Money Pit, Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson in Heartburn, Richard Pryor in Brewster's Million. He was invited to perform at the White House for several of the presidents and their honored guests. President Ronald Reagan, if you think about President Ronald Reagan and the time that he was in office and what it was like for him to be in office. And he brought Yakov in and he called Yakov the national treasure. And I know I'm watching his work, he really is. And we're going to talk about some of what he's done, not only for the lives of the people that he's touched, but for this nation. Since 1992, he has performed in his very own theater, and that's in Branson, Missouri, which is just absolutely beautiful, where he has entertained over 4 million visitors. He's produced outstanding award-winning shows, and his mission statement is to experience happiness and then to teach it to the world with a passion through comedy and sensitivity. And his newest endeavor is a show. It's called Happily Ever Laughter. And it's in Los Angeles right now at the Acme Theater. And I've had the opportunity to see this show twice. And I can tell you, every time I watch Yakov on stage, something else unfolds inside of me. There is another part of me that is open. I hear things I've never heard before from him, and I hear things and learn things I've never even known about myself. And so it's such an amazing journey into one's own passion and compassion and where those emotions ride. And he does it with such hilarity and such zest and such zeal and such enthusiasm and such bliss, but you can't help laughing. I've brought everybody I know, and I certainly would recommend that you come to his show. So whether on stage, you know, or whether he's in a classroom, he just loves audiences, and audiences love him. And so we are so lucky today. We are so honored and so blessed and so gifted in so many things to have this amazing guest, Yakov Smirnoff. So Yakov, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Wow. I love the introduction. Thank you.
Did I ever tell you that my father proposed to my mom on the first date?
No, that shook me up. That's awesome.
So,
wow. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
No. So what I was just sharing as at the opening of the show, I've had the chance to see your show, and it's brand new. Every time I see you on stage, I hear something I've never heard before, and I learn something in myself. And there's this well, it's almost like this deep, deep well and barrel of laughter inside of me, and I didn't even know it could go any deeper and further. And every time I'm with you, it's just these, like, effervescent bubbles that are coming up of joy. And so where do you begin? How did you decide or know that laughter and love are connected?
Well, it was something that happened early in my life when I made my parents laugh, and I didn't really mean to. We lived in a communal apartment in Soviet Union. 9 families lived together, and you know, my parents, when they wanted to be romantic, they would send me to look out the window, and then my dad. And then my dad said, "What do you see in the window?" I said, "Our neighbors being romantic." And he said, "How can you tell?" And I said, "Because their son is looking at me." And my parents both laughed. And it was such a joyful feeling because all of a sudden there was a sense of connection. And I felt loved. I felt I was in the presence of love. And yet I was a little kid, so I kind of put that in my mind together, that laughter really is a confirmation of people being connected to one another. So with that knowledge, I went to the world and wanted to connect to my classmates, and so I would make them laugh. And that would get results. Teachers didn't care for those results, but I would get in trouble, and I would be in the principal's office a lot. But it was, it made me want to continue to do this enough that even when I was coming to America and I didn't speak English, my biggest desire was that I will make people laugh.
It's so amazing. I mean, and you truly have a gift. You are so touched because you touch people. Now, truly, it's true. You touch people on every level of their life. When you talk to them, they recognize something in themselves. They recognize something in their partners. They recognize something in their family and their friends and their neighbors and in their world. It's almost like you play the symphony of human emotions and laughter.
Well, thank you. That's very, very beautifully said. Thank you.
So how did you get started? How did you start doing your comedy shows, and how did you start doing your television shows? I mean, what an extraordinary journey to come from Russia and to not speak the language and then to have a desire to bring people joy.
Well, desire was there from, in Russia I used to work on, I was a performer early in life. I was 15 years old when I started. I started, it was a talent show in high school, and I thought I was a singer. And so I sang a couple of songs, and there was a lot of laughter in the audience during my singing. So I realized that wasn't healthy. However, when I was doing jokes, they were laughing in the right places, and I thought, oh, okay, I got it. So that was how I got a taste of it. And then over the years, my parents thought that it was a crazy idea, to even consider anything like that as a career, because in the Soviet Union, they literally, I'm not making this up, they had a department of jokes, and all the comedians had to submit their material to the department of jokes. It was kind of a dangerous thing to even consider doing anything like that. So my parents thought that they would be crazy. So my first, my bachelor's degree was in as an artist, and actually prior to that, my professional first job or education was a refrigerator mechanic. And then,
seriously?
And then I
went,
yeah, totally, totally serious. And so that didn't feed my soul, as you can imagine. And then I decided to be an artist, and so I went to school. But through the school, I continued to do shows, like entertain people and make people laugh. And everywhere I would go, then I went to the military. Well, actually, military was before the college. So I went to the military, and I got, I would make people laugh there too. And that was dangerous. However, that's what I wanted to do. So during my college, I started doing more and more shows and actually started getting paid for that in Russia. And so that was the beginning of realization, because my parents, when they saw that I was making money, then now they were interested. And so they were kind of supportive of me. And then when I worked on the cruise ships on the Black Sea, and that's where I got the idea of coming
to America because there were Americans there, and they would see me perform, even though I spoke only Russian at that time. They would still laugh because of my facial expressions and timing. And so that gave me an idea that, wait, what if that's translatable? What if I can do comedy in America? And it was totally unknown and a very daring thing to do, to come to America and didn't speak English. And I was determined, and I wanted to learn the language. I locked myself in the room, watched TV for 3 months, and then I realized it was a Spanish station. And then I had to learn, learn it all over again. So those were the things. And I would just tell the stories to people. And then, the other thing I did, I became a bartender. And I, again, barely spoke English. So people would say 7 and 7. I would say it's 14. And they would laugh. And then I thought, oh, I'm doing pretty good. So those were the beginnings of my career. And then I came to Hollywood. Thought that it will be overnight success, however, never happens like that. But I started performing at the Comedy Store. And that was a place where Robin Williams, David Letterman, Billy Crystal, all those people were performing there at that time. So I was very lucky to see these great performers. And my roommate was Andrew Dice Clay, which I don't know if you know who that is.
Absolutely. Sure, of course.
So you can imagine the contrast, yeah. The contrast, I'm all clean and he is all different, But it was all good time in that environment.
That's amazing. I mean, just the fact that how brave and how bold. That's really just jumping off a cliff to come to California and say, I'm going to make it in this business. Yeah. I don't speak this language. But yeah. I know that when I talk to people, they smile and they laugh, and there might be something there.
That's it. And arrogance is bliss. I did not know that it will be difficult. I literally had no idea that. So when I got a movie with Robin Williams, and I just started doing like television shows to promote the movie. It was like people were saying, "Do you realize how amazing, how big that break is?" I didn't. I literally was that naive that I thought, "Well, that's isn't what it's supposed to be." So I guess I had no blockage in the way that would stop me.
That's so great. We talk about, I have another show called Unlimited Life that I would love you to be a guest on. We talk about breaking those boundaries when there aren't any limitations and how one lives their life in the process of that. And it's such an incredible way. And so that's what falling in love is, isn't it? When people fall in love, you just go over that cliff. You just fall into the other person and you're not afraid. There's just, it just feels like that's what you're supposed to do. And it's right.
I guess so. I think nature helps us a little bit. Those hormones push us over that cliff, I think.
And so how did you start talking about love and laughter together? And how did you start doing your stand-ups with that? Or did you just say, love makes people laugh? Or when I make people laugh, they love me or love each other deeper?
You know, it took a little while. I actually went back to college. I went to the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school, and I got my master's degree in psychology in 2006. So I did a lot of empirical studies because I thought this topic was very important. And I had big discussions with my professor, Martin Seligman. He's a leading professor in positive psychology, and he had a very strong opinion about this. He believed that laughter creates love. That was his opinion, and I said to him, did you study it, or did you just make up this, conclusion? And he said, I study it big time. And I said, how did you study it? Did you have, like, focus groups? He said, yes. I said, what was it? And he said, well, you gave me a DVD of your Broadway show. I showed it to my wife.
He laughed. We made love. There's my study. I said,
that's
okay.
Wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
Yeah, it's a depth, in-depth, no pun intended, research. And you know, he, but I disagree. I mean, I agree with him in on the surface. I think that we all agree that laughter is good for you. I don't think anybody on the planet will say, nah, I don't want it. I think everybody agrees. And where my quest started was, can we use laughter as a gauge whether we're on track or like a GPS, basically, and say, recalculating, you know, you don't have enough laughter in your relationship. That means you're off course, you know, those kind of things. When that came to my mind, and I thought that was pretty accurate, and I think once you pay attention to it, you start seeing that that's an easy one to figure out. But the bigger portion of the research became what creates laughter, because I do this intentionally. I make people laugh. You know, I can be tired, I can be not feeling well or whatever. I will still get on stage and I'll make people laugh. And so I knew that I had a formula for that, but I didn't necessarily know what it was. And that, so this research became very important to me, because in the beginning of the relationship, I would say, if you ask your listeners, they would say overwhelmingly that everyone remembers a lot of laughter. And I believe that's hormonally driven, because we know how to connect to one another for procreation purposes. And a lot of studies have been done lately that honeymoon stage, and I hope I'm not shocking anyone here, because you might be, you know, ready to buy a dress and you're listening to the show, and Yaakov Smirnov is telling you that initial time frame of that honeymoon stage only can last from 1 to 2 years. That is hormonally driven. And what it's doing, the hormones, it's like free introductory offer. And then you got to pay full price. So you're getting tricked into this deal, right? So the important part for me became, what does happen during that honeymoon stage that is natural for us and we so much enjoy and we so much love, and why can't we repeat it? It's like making chocolate cake. You might do it intuitively. However, if somebody measured the recipe or created the recipe, then you can repeat it over and over and over again. So that was my quest. I decided I'm going to figure out how to make this chocolate cake that will make everybody laugh. And I think it's fairly doable. I really believe that. I believe that the main ingredient in that cake is that you are complementing one another versus competing with one another. And when my audience and I are creating laughter together, we're totally complementing. And what that means, that they accept me as their leader, and they accept me to guide them or take them on this journey, and they totally compliment me every time they hear a joke, they laugh, they'll applaud, they cheer, and that feeds me to continue to do that. So in comparison, I believe in every area of our life, we have someone who is good at giving that gift, and the other person could be graciously receiving that gift, and then laughter is one of these confirmations that transaction is happening correctly or it's successful. The other symptom, or the other way to tell if you're making love. If you're making love, more likely you that, again, that exchange of the gift and giving and receiving was complementary, and you continue to fall in love all over again.
That's really beautiful to think about. I remember when I was watching you on stage, you were talking about how your mom used to come to your shows.
Yeah.
And I was so touched by that she would come to the audience. And what an amazing gift to be able to give that to her and for so many years. I just think that's so beautiful. And so for each stage of the relationship, we really can use laughter to deepen the relationship.
And I want to be clear here because it's easier to formulate that way. But most people are not professional comedians. So when you put in front of them and say, use laughter to deepen your relationship, I'm actually saying the opposite. I'm saying deepen the relationship and laughter will happen. It's easier, actually, to focus on the relationship than focus on laughter. You can't fake your way through life by telling jokes. I can do it for an hour and a half, but that's a Band-Aid. That's not what people are missing. What people are missing is that complementary relationship that produces laughter.
That's brilliant and so profound. I mean, I absolutely love that. And then, is it okay? I want to ask you, since we're talking about the heart and we're talking about relationships, about the painting that you did. Because I really, that to me is, there are all kinds of love.
Yes.
And that was a love that, as you talk about deepening the relationship, that was a relationship that became so deep and so embedded and so part of who you are that the overflow from that was something so magnificent for the entire nation. So can you talk about that gift?
Sure. After 9/11, I felt distressed, obviously, as everyone else in the world, watching that destruction of American landscape and how violating it was. And so because I'm an artist and that's how I express my feelings, I started to paint, and I wanted desperately to fix what was destroyed. And so in my mind, instead of the towers, I placed American flag in the shape of a heart. And you can go on my website, yakov.com, and it's yakov.com, and you'll see it. And so as I was painting this, I was envisioning that to be a mural at the Ground Zero. And I had no idea how to get it there or anything like that, because I was painting on the night of the attack. And but yet the picture in my mind was very clear that this is what needs to be there. And it took almost the whole year, because at that time the security in that region was so tight, and nobody, the politicians or the city hall, or no one wanted to really talk about doing anything in that area. And I was so driven to do it, and so I went again with my intuition and my perseverance, and I found the people who own the building right next to the crater of Ground Zero, and I approached them, and after many rejections, I got that yes, you can put up on the scaffolding of the destroyed building, or the building that was damaged. Now you can put it up there for 10 days. And if you can get the permits from the city and things like that. And so unfortunately, again, no one was willing to help out. And I reached out in desperation to steel union workers, because they are the ones who put up those big structures and big billboards and things like that. And I reached out to them asking for their help, and they came to meet me in New York at that building that actually people from Ohio owned, that building in New York. And so that Middle America kind of a spirit allowed me to get in a little bit. And so the New York, those steel workers, they're pretty rough guys. You know, they have, you know, the hard heads and those tool belts, and they all cuss in many different languages and, you know, and all of that stuff. And I said, why are you so upset? And they said, well, we're the ones who were carrying the bodies out of that God-forsaken place, and we don't want to be here. Why, what the heck do you want from us? You know, and I said, well, thank you for coming out, and here's the idea. I wanted to put up the mural, and this was like August and they, of 2002, and I wanted that mural to be there for the first anniversary memorial. And so I, so they said, well, are you kidding me? There's no way we can do that. And I said, okay, how much can I pay you? You know, and they said, you don't have enough money. Donald Trump would not have enough money to do something like that that quickly. And I said, okay, well, I guess that's not going to happen. And so they're leaving. They're, you know, and then they saw this mock-up of the mural. And they said, what is that? And I said, that's what I'm trying to put up. And so now they got quiet and they start passing it around to each other. And then the leader said, okay. And I said, okay, what? And said, okay, we'll do it. And I said,
wow.
Well, how much would it cost? And he said, nothing. And so now it's like, I'm going, so what's the catch? I said, do I have the permits? And I'm showing them the paper that I have, which is very, very little. And he laughed and he said, you don't have permits and you will never get them, but we'll put it up anyway.
Whew. Wow.
And they showed up, and they showed up on September 7, 2002, on a Saturday night, a Saturday morning, 50 union workers in their own cars, and it's hard for me to even, you know, to continue to tell you this because it's just so. And they worked 12 hours straight, and they made sure that mural was tight, and when it was a little bit, you know, crooked, they went back up and they changed it, and it was just mind-boggling. And I said to the union worker, I said, why did you choose to do that? And he said, so I can drive with my son, and I can show him this mural, and I want to tell him that I helped to put this mural up in the skies. And it was there for 18 months. It was supposed to be there only for 10 days, but once they saw it up there, The sign underneath said, the human spirit is not measured by the size of an act, but by the size of a heart.
That's beautiful. That's incredible. How much magic and how much love you have shared with so many. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And when you talk about heroism and bravery and courage and heart, I mean, that's all those things. Every step that you have done, whether it's to come out here and to be brave enough to get on stage, or whether it's to paint what's in your soul and to know that you have to share it with a nation. I mean, you really have been unstoppable. And
well,
all you have done is shared love and love and love and more love, and What an honor and what a blessing.
Thank you.
And that's on your website? People can see that painting if they go to your website?
Yeah. Yeah, or they can just Google
it. I was just, it just took my breath away.
Yeah. You can just Google 9/11 mural Yakov Smirnov. You'll see it. It was huge. It was 200 feet tall by 130 feet wide. It was standing next to it was just unbelievable, overwhelming.
And you saw it in your head before you painted it? You knew what it would look like?
Yeah, on the night of a year before it went up, yes. I saw it, and I didn't know what the address of the building was. I wish I did. It would have saved me a lot of energy, but I didn't. I just saw it, and it turned out just the way I saw it.
That's incredible. It really is. Thank you for that. And I'm thanking you not just for myself, but for this entire nation and for anybody that's ever been touched and moved. So let me be the voice of all the gratitude for you.
Thank you.
Truly. Now, when you do a show, like your show that you're doing now, your Happily Ever Laughter show, do you see that? Do you know how the jokes are going to land or the things that you do and that you present to people the same way?
I think so. You've been very helpful, Nicole, in because you live here and I'm just coming back from Branson, and you know some very key people like this wonderful director, Andrew Wyman, that you brought to see the show. I totally see the results of what I'm doing here. I totally see that I need to take this message, Happily Ever Laughter, that we're covering just a little bit here, just a little tiny tip of the iceberg. And I believe that there is a huge amount of information that needs to be shared with people like your audience who is listening right now, need to know this stuff, because without it, a lot of things that we do in love is like we're blindfolded. And it's nice when it's wonderfully erotic or some fun activity, but if we become stressed and frustrated and we have no guidance, logical guidance, not just emotional guidance, because that's wonderful when it works, but when it doesn't work, boy, you know how destructive it can be. And I'm thinking about how logically laughter is very, in my opinion, laughter is a confirmation of transformation. And it's something that happens spontaneously in the moment. However, once you start paying attention to it, it could be your guiding force.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a great show also for couples to see before they get married, or even couples that are in relationship or have been married many years, because there's so much to talk about after your show. I mean, I've been there a couple times with my friends now, and we've talked about it constantly. Everything you said, we've brought up over and over and over again. And so I think that, you know, everything that you talk about really is valuable in designing a relationship. And so to me, it's just phenomenal. And then one of my favorite parts of your show, which I'd love to talk about, is the couple that have been married 75 years, now 80 years.
Yeah.
And I know my
parents
just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. And for me, I have learned so much about love over the time that, you know, my parents have been in front of me to show me what love looks like. Mm-hmm. And they have so much respect for each other and honor for each other and so much integrity. And the way that they light up when the other person walks in the room and the way that they put the other person first. And I've had such a beautiful example of love, as well as I've just had laughter into tears being around my parents because they make each other laugh so often and there's such a joy in them being together. But 75 and 80 years, so tell me about this couple.
They're amazing. They live in Thousand Oaks, California. They got married during Depression time. I met them when they were, they just celebrated their 75th wedding anniversary. I saw them on the Jay Leno show.
And when I saw the segment, I said, they are my poster children for Happily Ever After. How many couples do you know that are not poster grandparents, you know? And so
right.
I reached out to them and I said, I'm doing show in Branson, Missouri. At that time, I did a pilot for a talk show. And I said, you would be wonderful guests if you would choose to, you know, come. And so they did. And I flew them to Branson, Missouri. And it was a funny, cute story that, we sent a limo to pick them up. And the limo driver was told that it's a couple with their son. So he brought a baby car seat for that. Yeah, and then they called and said, how old is the son? And he said, 70. So it was a little bit different than what he was expecting.
That's great.
And it was adorable. So when they got there, you know, and they were giggling, they were laughing, they were holding hands, and I said to them, what is your secret? And they said, we're afraid to fall down. So they're just adorable. And so I stayed in touch with them. I actually talked to them yesterday. I'm going to go for dinner at their place next weekend or this coming weekend. So they're still doing good. They're still hanging in there. They're still laughing. And it's hard. It's getting harder for them because their hearing aids are harder to, you know, tune in the same frequency. So that kind of stuff. But they're still hanging in there.
That's amazing. What a great story. Mm-hmm. What a fabulous story. And that, I mean, just to be able to think about laughing that many years and happiness for that many years. I was talking to somebody this week, and he was talking about happiness. And he was saying, it's not that I've ever been unhappy. It's just that when I'm happy now, it's a different happy. It opens me in a different way. There's something that I can't explain, but it's just this different feeling. It's like jumping off the ground. And so when you have those different levels of happiness in a relationship, and then do you have that with your children? Do you have that kind of laughter with your kids?
Yes, I do. And it's also, it's more than, you know, I'm using it like you saw Natasha this weekend at this wonderful, you know, place that we were. And, you know, she's 22, you know, and we're kind of redefining the relationship. She's a young lady versus a kid or a teenager. So, but I still use laughter as a gauge. You know, we're saying goodbye. She was leaving in the evening, and I was helping her with her luggage to put in her car. And as, you know, she's driving out, I stood by the, it was later in the evening, so there was a booth there at the garage that I pretended that I was an attendant of the booth, and I was waving goodbye to her, and so I could see her smiling, and she said, "You need a ride, Dad?" So I sat on the hood of her car in my fancy suit, and she was driving slow to the door of the hotel, and she was laughing, and I knew that we're leaving each other connected. You know, and then she sent me a text. She said, thank you for riding in the hood of my car. And I said, I pretended that it was a parade. The best part of the parade was the driver of the float. And she, you know, so, and we just keep, and I said, thanks for your laughter. And I literally I acknowledged that I was making her laugh. And she was laughing, and that tells me that we're connected.
Right. So what a great, you know, we talk about on this show very often the keys and the tools and the techniques to a happy relationship, or how to keep a relationship alive or how to deepen a relationship. And this is such a wonderful way. And we've been talking about your show, but I want to tell people, where do they go to see your show? Because I love, you know, the audience to be able to find you.
The easiest way to find me is just go to yakov.com, Y-A-K-O-V.com, Y-A-K-O-V.com, and then they will give you the schedule. I'm at the Acme Comedy Hollywood Theater, and it will give you the schedule, and you can, you know, purchase tickets online. So it's all there, and it's very inexpensive. It's only $25, and you laugh for an hour and a half. So it's probably about 52 cents a laugh or something like that. Something like that.
So the Acme Theater, and it's yakov.com, and I so highly recommend that people go to the show. I really do. And one of the things that we've been doing on the show is we've been asking people definitions. You know, Deirdre Haidt was on, and we were asking her about what is marriage, what is a vow. We've been asking people what is harmony, what is a contract, what is a covenant. And so for you, what is laughter?
Laughter, in my opinion, is a verbalization of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's an auditory response to balance. When both people, one is giving, one is receiving, and that's complementary. That's when laughter spontaneously combusts.
Great definition. I would love to be able to use that on the website and share that with people. That's really
absolutely. Thanks for asking.
Definition.
I don't think I ever described it that way, but now I have.
That was fantastic. It's really great. Thank you. And so, and what would be a tip that you would give somebody getting married, a young couple? What would you say to them? How do they keep that? You're saying deepen the relationship. And laughter will happen? Is it the trust? Is it the truth? Is it?
I would say, first of all, pay attention to laughter. And if you can kind of make, I mean, when you're in that honeymoon stage, if you can just notice when it happens and what are the moments that it does happen, because that is your gauge, that is your guide for the rest of your life. So if you can make a note and say, we laughed when we took a shower together, whatever, and it was just so much laughter there. Or if we, you know, went swimming, or we ran on the beach, or whatever that the circumstances that happened, that laughter did happen, that will help you tremendously to later on when you naturally are not doing those things, to bring it back and say, we can always do that. We can schedule to go to the beach and run together. I know the kids come and, you know, we get busy and all of that, but when you choose that, when it's a choice, then we can create the environment when we're going to complement one another. And pay attention to that too. Who is giving something and who is receiving? And when people say, well, we make each other laugh, that's nice and sweet. But as a scientist of laughter, I don't believe that. I believe that, yes, it happened, it seemed that way, that you're making each other laugh. But most of the time, someone, if you take a snapshot, one person gave something, whether it was a compliment, whether it was you know, a funny remark, whatever it was a gift. And then the other person received it. And that's the laughter. And that's that one shot. Next moment, the other person might have given something back. And the first person received it. And boom, there's another laughter. But most people are not aware of that, so they're, you know, they're bunching everything together and say, oh, we used to make each other laugh, and now we don't. Well, you got to uncoil that. You got to untie that knot and start recognizing that there is a specific person did something, gave something very specific. And the more specific you can find it, the more notes you can make,
That will help you tremendously in the future.
What a great, I've never thought to do that. That's just a brilliant idea. That really.
Yeah. I used to keep, for years, I don't do it now as much, but I used to keep laughing journal. And I wanted, and there was a conscious decision that I want to be only with people, or majority of the time. Sometimes you can't control it. But you want to be around people that are, that you create laughter with together. And because that means you're in harmony. And I was thinking about it would work in divorce court as well. If it didn't work out, you can say, Your Honor, look, I journaled this. We haven't laughed for 10 years.
That's fantastic. How much fun. Can you imagine that would, Yaakov, you're interested in doing a show. That's a great scene. You're going to keep that scene.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just amazing. And so what's the next step for you? You're looking to move on to the television forum with your show, which I think is just, I mean, I know that your artwork has touched so many people, and I know that your comedy through the years has just touched millions and millions of people. And I love now to be able to take the comedy or Happily Ever Laughter show, because it is funny and it is true and it is real and it is everything.
I would be curious if you have people call in, or if they want to like participate and say if they think that that kind of a concept would be interesting to watch. It would be interesting to get feedback from your audience, too.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they have that capacity or not.
I am finding out for you.
Yeah, I think it would be great. Do people think, after listening to this, do they see that it would be something that somebody would want to tune in and see? How do you sustain that? Because I would like it to be like a reality show. And people lost the laughter, and I come in and help them find it or bring it back.
I think that's a wonderful idea. And I know when we were talking about it just at the show in the theater and with some of our friends, it really is something that can recharge. And it's so different than what you see now. It is, because it's something that spontaneously touches you. And that's what I think with your show. That's what I'm saying. Even though I've seen your show several times, it's like a brand new show for me. It's completely, completely just every time that I watch you on stage, I hear something I haven't heard before, and something opens inside of me. It's like a little click inside of me. It's like a little part of me that's finally just been released, and this part that I've held so tight. And so to be able to do that to a television audience is just, that would be so much fun to be able to do that. And
I could really
see that. And I think, it reaches every age. It reaches, every ethnic group, every background, whoever you are, that we're all human. We're all human. We're all people, and we're all human, unless you have any, pets. I know my pets watch television. It's amazing. I come home and they look like they're watching TV. They're so intense. So I don't know what they get, but even when I leave, I try to put on nice shows for them so they're not watching any, negative, because it really looks like they're watching television. But most of the television watchers are going to be people that are, and we're all, like you're saying, we're all connected. Through joy, we're all.
I wonder when the commercial for cat food go on TV. Do they go in the kitchen? You think, and or find the food?
Find the food.
I'm just curious if they're they're going, ooh, that looks yummy. Let's go see what we got in the fridge.
That would be really funny. But I know my dogs, they look like they're watching. It's amazing. It's almost like you don't want to interrupt them. You want to say, I'm leaving, but I, you're watching TV. So. But I know shows that have even, I remember in watching television shows that were nighttime dramas, and occasionally they would throw in a line that was funny. A line that was real, and it would totally break whatever mm-hmm. the tension was, and all of mm-hmm. a sudden everything would shift and everything would change.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I think it's great. I'm not sure that we can unleash people at this hour on the show, but I would love to unleash people, but what I would love to do is if people would be interested into seeing this kind of show, for them to be able to contact us. So you can certainly email me at Nicole@NicoleBrandonWorldwide, or how can they reach out to you to let you know that they would love to see this kind of a show?
I think if they send it to you, you can send it to me.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
So I would love to know that, what people's sense is, what the sensibility is, and especially in relationships. And then how did you come up with the title? It's the best title I've ever heard. So...
I'm not sure. It just came to me one day, and it was like, I did one show. It was called Happily Ever. As Long as a Wolf Shall Laugh. That was one show that I did. But then all of a sudden, this came to me, and it was like, wow, this is so much better. This is so much more concise and clear. And so I fell in love with it.
It's a wonderful title. It really is. And then going from standing on a comedy stage to working on television to opening your very own theater, which I imagine was another challenge. It's just, you just take on challenges. You're like, what else can I do? I love that. I absolutely love that. And then coming here with this incredible show and helping all these people in relationships. And so... how did you decide Branson, and how did you decide to come back and to help all these people now?
I think Branson was a necessity at some point, because in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed, and that was a big deal, because most of my comedy, or at least what people perceived me doing, was jokes about Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union was gone, there was no reason for me to have, or my career did not have that much need, or I was releasing the tension, but the tension was gone. So that's what happened. And David Letterman had a top 10 list on that night. And he said that now the things that will change, that the Soviet Union is no longer there. And I made number one on the list, and it was Yakov Smirnov Will Be Out of Work. And I thought it was funny, but unfortunately it wasn't. So I, because of that, I had to kind of find a place, and figure that I'll go find a place where they don't know that the Soviet Union collapsed. And and Branson, they didn't know, and they didn't care. And it's been a blessing in disguise, because... it gave me a chance to develop what I have developed, and now I can take it to the world. You know? So it's been great, and I still have the theater there, and I will continue to do shows there in October, November. So if you're in that area, also go to yakov.com, yakov.com, and you can find me and come see me there.
Oh, I highly recommend that everybody that is listening to the show come and see you, because truly, you are the funniest man that I know, and the most loving man that I know, and the most talented man that I know, all rolled into one. And so that is just, that is a three-time charm that everybody should be racing out to see you, truly. And I think that for people that are getting married and just starting the relationship together, or people that are trying love again who have been married and something didn't work and they're listening to you and now they say, gosh, I'm going to keep a laughter journal and really pay attention to those moments that we have together and what it is and what we did that brought that kind of joy. Or even people that have been married, like my parents, 50 years, 25 years, like your friends, 80 years, and to be able to track what is it that brings us those moments where we laugh together and that joy. I love the idea of having a laughter journal. I'm going to start my own, and we'll have to come back on the show and see how I'm doing with it.
Yes, that's great.
I would love to, absolutely love to be able to do that. And we're so excited that you're doing this is a television show, and I know that you're just going to be able to reach so many people with it. So I'm looking forward to the audience writing in and saying what you think of this being a television show, what you would like to see, and certainly what are the things that make you laugh? What are those moments in life, those little tiny moments, right, and how you're affected? Because that's what it is. When I saw you on stage, and you would go from sheer laughter to such heart and such compassion and such care, and all of a sudden I found myself just so deep within myself and so moved and so touched. And then in that place, all of a sudden, I would start to giggle again. And it's like this roller coaster ride of emotion in life. And that's what you do. You really, it's like the Pandora's box of all the joy on the planet. So I was at an event last night, and, you know, with a group of all of our friends. And somebody had said, this is such an unusual group because you schedule fun. Most people don't schedule
fun, right.
But you all actually schedule fun. And most people have fun, but you schedule fun. And it was great to actually think about that. And so should people and couples schedule fun?
Absolutely, yes. I think they just need to know what it is for them. Because sometimes it could be different for a guy and a girl, and they need to find activities that do create fun and laughter for both of them.
I love that. Well, you, such a joy having you today, and you certainly are just such a magical gift. And your humor, your laughter, your talent, your timing, and your art, the most incredible gift you could have given to this nation, other than coming here. Because certainly beyond the art is the fact that we got you, which is the better gift, that you are here. And we are all so blessed and so honored and so lucky to have you. So for everybody listening, go to the Acme Theater and see Happily Ever Laughter, and absolutely yakov.com. Go to Branson and stay tuned for the television show, which I know is going to become your very favorite show. And we're just great gratitude of having you with us today. So, Yaakov, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. All right. Have a good one. Okay.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you.
Bye-bye.
How amazing. Can you imagine coming to this country, not knowing the language, and your desire, your greatest heart's desire, is to make people laugh and to be able to spread love. And not only to be able to do that on television, on screen, in theaters, to people that you meet, but then also to have a passion to be able to share your heart, your pride, and your love for this country. I mean, what an extraordinary, extraordinary man. And he gave you the greatest tool to keep a laughter journal. So that is today's takeaway, the laughter journal, and that the more you love, the more you connect, the closer you are, that the way you measure that is how you laugh together. And so one of our greatest teachers and philosophers, Yaakov Smirnoff, and just truly, what a fantastic show. Next week, we have a very special guest. We have DC Cordova, and DC Cordova is actually doing both of our shows next week, Unlimited Life, and she's on Hourglass Brides. She is from the Money in You Institute, and I have taken Money in You, and I can tell you that it has changed my life, my relationship to money, the way that she talks about money, and your success. And so we will be doing Money and You on Unlimited Life and Money in Us, how you deal with money together in a relationship, on next week's show. And then after that, yes, we get Arjuna and we start talking about sexual intimacy, and we have so many wonderful shows ahead. So we thank you for being with us on Hourglass Bride. Again, we thank Yaakov Smirnoff and Happily Ever Laughter. Go to yaakov.com, the Acme Theater. Next week, make sure you stay tuned for DC Cordova and Money and Us. Learn how to combine your money. Learn how to be wealthy as a couple. And really learn how to prosper and have that kind of life you always knew you can live and have everything you've ever wanted and dreamed of, but mostly keep a laughter journal. connect with each other, love each other. And through that deep connection and love, you'll be able to measure your laughter and be able to measure the kind of life that you've always known you were meant to have. So may your dreams come true. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Sunday.